Canada's mobile broadband usage numbers are dismal. We rank dead last in mobile broadband users and have some of the lowest numbers of mobile data usage compared to other G7 countries. These metrics need to improve. While many are focused on the number of providers and the competitiveness of our telecommunications industry, there's another way to move the needle. Research by the Conference Board of Canada shows that increased tower sharing can play a role in changing this critical metric for Canadians. It could allow for more tower development in rural and remote regions, eliminate redundancies in infrastructure development, reduce the environmental impact of passive infrastructure, and lead to improved connectivity. In this episode, I'm joined by one of the study's authors, Dan Carpenter, and Country Manager Canada from SBA Communications Canada, Wendy Zatilny, to discuss how changes at the federal and municipal level could help foster the growth of a tower sharing industry in Canada. I'm Michael Bassett, and you're listening to Leadership Perspectives, a Conference Board of Canada podcast. My guests this episode are Daniel Carpenter from the Conference Board of Canada's Innovation and Technology Team and Wendy Zatilny, Country Manager, SBA Canada. Dan and Wendy, welcome to Leadership Perspectives.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Thanks, Michael. Happy to be here as well.
When Canadians think about the telecoms industry, the conversation tends to focus on company size and competition. But this research comes at the issue from a very novel way. Dan, why don't you briefly tell us about the research you and your colleagues conducted and what you found?
We recently published this report, Improving Tower Sharing in Canada. And the subtitle here is really important. It's the potential role of a healthy independent tower industry. We wanted to take a look at the telecom industry from this unique angle. In Canada, there is a tower sharing mandate, but evidence indicates that it doesn't happen that often in practice. And when it does happen, it happens selectively or to the competitive detriment of those who aren't included in that tower sharing agreement. We're only one of several developed countries without a sizable independent tower market. Many developed nations have moved to that model. We wanted to look at what that looks like for Canada, and we found there could be a whole host of potential benefits for this model, seeing greater adoption in the country, such as expanded mobile coverage, lower costs, even a reduction of the environmental impact of the infrastructure within telecommunications, all while keeping with the government's mandate of promoting Canadian ownership and control of the carriers.
Wendy, why was this important to you?
SBA Canada is a Canadian division of SBA Communications. It's a global multinational company run out of Florida in the United States. Both SBA Communications in general and SBA Canada are tower cos. And as tower cos, we run a tower sharing model. That's our business model. And that model is very much one of being a neutral landlord, where we'll come in, we'll invest, we will provide the upfront infrastructure investment, land acquisition, site development, tower construction, all of that, and then lease that space on the constructed towers out to a carrier, one of our cell phone carriers, for them to put their equipment on. And then we manage the tower, we manage the site for everybody. The tower sharing model we've seen in other countries really can help improve access, especially in rural and remote communities, has been demonstrated to potentially help lower some cell phone and connectivity costs, which is another issue for Canadians. From a public policy perspective, there are a lot of compelling reasons to look into this model, certainly why I'm doing the work that I am as country manager at SBA, and also in terms of broadening connectivity. The tower sharing model is one where you have a neutral landlord that builds and maintains the passive infrastructure, the cell phone towers, and then rents space out to the carriers and others who might need it for connectivity and communications purposes. There's a lot of potential that because this is what a tower co does, there are financial efficiencies to be gained. We maintain towers. We can do it much more efficiently than a carrier because that's our core business. That's a tower co's core business. By virtue of having multiple tenants on a tower, we can provide connectivity. It makes financial sense to go into areas where, in other cases, as the sole tenant on that tower, a mobile network operator might just not derive the revenue stream to make it worth their while. There's all kinds of compelling reasons for us to look at from a public policy perspective, and again, broader connectivity perspective.
Wendy, in reading Dan's report, increasing the use of shared towers does seem like a clever way, and obviously you would agree with this, to increase the access for many Canadians. From Dan's report, it seems particularly relevant to the rural and remote communities. Dan's work highlights that in places like the U.S., 90% of the towers are shared, but Canada is fractions of that. Why do you think this model hasn't made more inroads into our country?
Our carriers, certainly the big three, are very strong. They have healthy balance sheets and have not necessarily needed to look into other models for financing their infrastructure development. Keeping in mind, of course, that infrastructure actually adds to the value of the company to begin with, there just probably hasn't been the same drive towards seeking alternate solutions. At the same time, most of the connectivity development that has occurred has developed in urban, more densely populated areas. So again, hasn't been the need to really start addressing the problem of rural and remote connectivity. Now, that being said, I think that's really going to be changing now. Certainly, we've seen what happened during the pandemic. There was a flight from major urban areas into rural areas. People basically moved out and bought houses outside of their urban areas where they could be outside a little bit more, have a bit more space, but still working remotely, still needed that connectivity. So there was a driving need and a demand for strong levels of connectivity pushing outside of the urban centers. Traditionally, that was part of the case that drove the carriers to stay within the confines of how they had developed historically. But I think now, given the societal shifts that we're seeing and given the focus of federal and provincial governments on increasing connectivity in rural and remote areas, this is where the model now starts to become particularly compelling and particularly interesting. We think we could play a role in there.
Dan, did your research find any other reasons beyond the ones that Wendy's shared on why we may not have this model more ingrained in Canada?
We didn't necessarily find this just in this report, but in a lot of the work we do on the innovation and technology team at the Conference Board of Canada, especially in things like the innovation report card and how Canada performs, we do find that Canadian companies and Canadian businesses in general are slow to innovate. They're slow to change the way that they do things, especially compared to many of our peer nations. This is a bit of a perennial problem in Canada and something that we're focusing on in general across industries, not just in telecommunications. But I would imagine that there is some of that element here as well with tower sharing and the independent towers market. We're really lagging behind our peers in key telecommunications performance indicators. We have the lowest number of mobile broadband subscriptions per capita amongst the G7 nations. And this ranking hasn't actually changed in the last 5 years, at least the 5 years up to 2020 when we had the most recent data. On average, those other G7 countries have about 34 more subscriptions per 100 inhabitants than Canada does. Given the strong association between wireless internet access and productivity gains in the economy, our low performance on that indicator, we think, really show that we're not realizing our full economic potential, especially in this area. And you might say, okay, well, maybe Canada doesn't have the highest number of mobile broadband subscriptions, but maybe on those subscriptions, Canadians are using more data. But that doesn't seem to be true either, because we're one of the lowest countries in mobile data usage per subscription.
From a public policy and economic development perspective, that has implications. Coming out of a pandemic, we've got economic challenges that all of us are facing as a country. And to try and find a way to stimulate economic growth, particularly outside of the urban areas, I think is very important. To be able to address some of these issues that Dan's talking about and enhance that range of subscriptions and data utilization in itself becomes a driver for economic growth and economic performance. There really is a strong connection between those two concepts.
So you both talked about the public policy imperatives around increasing access, around enabling broadband access for all Canadians to ensure that we're able to participate in the economy of today and tomorrow. What level of government needs to take action to actually move this forward?
Telecom is a federally regulated industry. a lot of the policy changes that are required to increase tower sharing will fall into that domain. We do have some recommendations for the federal government that go into the weeds a little bit. Things like requiring the mobile network operators to justify a separation distance so that there's not too many towers being built at one area. We recommend 800 meters to move it somewhat in line with that policy on the American side. That would inherently encourage tower sharing, because if you're mandated that you can't build a tower right next to another, well, if you want to have access to that zone, you're going to have to share on that tower. If you think about that, that also has implications for municipalities. You don't have to have multiple towers in an area. It reduces the amount of energy that's needed. It also has less of an environmental footprint. There's less land use that's required. This model does have a lot of advantages for municipalities and municipal governments. We do have some recommendations for municipal governments as well. Things like encouraging independent towers in their municipal tower sitting protocols. Most municipalities have a protocol that gives the rules and regulations for towers within that municipality. Adopting market rates for public land so that either tower cos or mobile network operators can acquire land for their towers at the market rate. And then encouraging co-location of tower developments. Also, just communicating with residents about these environmental and economic benefits, because sometimes towers can get a bit of a bad rap with a certain subset of residents in a municipality. But this model really would speak to some of those concerns that some people might have around sightline or not wanting to live too close to one. Promoting this model does help municipal councillors and municipalities have greater connectivity within their area and these environmental and economic benefits as well.
The role of the municipalities is extremely important. We, of course, do our land use authorizations. We require letters of concurrence from the municipalities in order to be able to site. Whether it's a tower co, such as ourselves, or one of the carriers, anybody who's building a tower in a municipality has to go through these processes. And it's good to have these kinds of controls on the development in municipal lands. But in many cases, they're very time consuming. They take quite a long time to process the requests. And the notion of having a shot clock or some kind of a countdown and a defined period of time within which we would be able to receive feedback and an approval from the municipality would also help. Because when you're building infrastructure, there's investment that's going in. Even as you're waiting for your approvals, there's other work that has to be done. So there's still money that's being spent. But the longer that that approval time gets drawn out, the more costly it becomes, the riskier it becomes. And then you never know what can change on you. We had one site where the approvals process, for a whole variety of reasons, became quite complex and got drawn out over about 3 years. In that time, the municipality actually built a road and an overpass beside the site where we were going to put the land, which means we had to reroute our entrance road around to the other side of the property, which meant that what was supposed to have been a 50-meter access road actually turned into nearly a kilometer over the field. The costs increased significantly on that tower. The notion of being able to at least get some kind of an approvals process with a countdown that gives certainty really would help with any kind of development. I love the Beecher Bay story. It's a wonderful story. Beecher Bay is a community at the very, very southern tip of Vancouver Island. It actually is right opposite the entrance to the Straits of Juan de Fuca. The band there has these great economic development and growth plans. They have built a wonderful community of high-end homes that people are buying into right now. The problem is there is absolutely no connectivity there at all. There's no way to get internet or cell phone access. So, of course, it was hampering their growth plans. We, as a tower co, were handed a site by one of the carriers because from a single carrier perspective, it was just too expensive to build. And I have to say, it was an expensive site to build. We basically had to cut a road up a mountain and build a tower up there. This is where our model really shines. And we took that on and we built that site. And a number of carriers have sited on there, along with some emergency response services And it has brought connectivity to that whole region. From an economic development perspective, it's really worked well. From an example of how the tower co-model can work as a neutral landlord with multiple tenants, actually making the financial aspects of it work, it's a great example. But we also worked in partnership with the band in getting the permitting done quickly so that we could actually get up there. It was also a good example of a partnership with, in this case, not a municipality, but the band itself, which has its own regulatory allowances. It was one of those situations where it was a win-win-win for everybody.
A conversation that's happening in Canada is around the competitiveness and the number of providers we have. Did your research find that increasing tower sharing will change the competitiveness of the telecom sector in Canada?
We believe it would, Michael. Given that tower sites usually make up the largest portion of infrastructure costs, operators would be able to save a substantial amount of capital expenditure with the tower sharing model. These savings could, I mean, we can't say they will, but they could enable operators to either pass those savings along to the consumer or focus more on improving their service offerings to Canadians. That is one way that the tower sharing model could improve competitiveness. It improves infrastructure access for smaller mobile network operators. That would also likely lead to lower costs for consumers. As Wendy was mentioning with the Beecher Bay example, in more rural and remote regions, it inherently increases competition because it creates more carriers that are available to people in those areas.
When you're looking at the comparative data for other jurisdictions, there was a sentence that really jumped out at me. This is to your point, Dan, about freeing up capital for the carriers. The quote was, "Greater outsourcing to independent towercos could release up to 28 billion in euros worth of capital for mobile network operators to reinvest in their networks and services." So if that's happening over in Europe, import that here into Canada, even though the population density is different, and even though the numbers might not be of the same order of magnitude, that in itself points to the potential of what we could be opening up and unleashing here in Canada.
I want to add to what Wendy said, because there has been some changes since this report was published. Recently, Innovation, Science and Economic Development Canada asked the CRTC in their new directive to look at the MVNO model, so the mobile virtual network operator model, potentially looking at that framework in Canada, moving to a full model if necessary, if competitiveness and affordability doesn't get better in Canada. This would be a pretty drastic change to the telecommunications industry, but it provides a lot more opportunity for tower sharing, because a mobile virtual network operator, they're virtual, they don't own their own infrastructure, so they inherently will need to rent space. If the CRTC does decide to move forward with this model in Canada, it provides a lot of opportunity for tower sharing and for the independent tower market, which we think would increase competitiveness and affordability for Canadians.
What's next for this work?
I'd like to see this brought into reality in Canada. We've talked about the potentials that the study has pointed to, and we believe it from our perspective, based on the experience that we've seen in other markets, to really see the tower co model being taken up more would be really exciting. A similar study that was done for the Latin American markets, where there is a significant amount of tower sharing that occurs, it's one of the more saturated markets. There is some pretty compelling data that has come out from there that is a great complement, I think, to the work of the conference board, because it has the proof points, the data of a longstanding mature towerco sector, to be able to do a bit of a compare and contrast there as well, and maybe get some of that data out would be very interesting.
One issue across the entire economy right now is labor. I mean, everybody is talking about the labor shortage. Things like towers, how are we going to build them if we don't have the labor? How are we going to run these networks if we don't have the labor? We're looking at the digital transitions that exist in the Canadian marketplace, and what are the best ways of moving people from at-risk jobs to digital careers and fast-growing digital careers especially. The last innovation report card we published, I believe, was in 2021. So we're going to look at updating that in how Canada performs and seeing how we're doing compared to our peer nations. That's what's coming up for us.
Thank you both for taking the time to talk about the research and your experience, Wendy, in this sector. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for having us.
Thanks. That was great.
You've been listening to Leadership Perspectives, a Conference Board of Canada podcast. If you like what you hear on this series, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how we're doing. For more podcasts, research, commentary, and ideas, visit conferenceboard.ca.